I am very jazzed about our next guest. I've never interviewed him, Brian Forster. He is, his website, HiddenIncaTours.com, HiddenIncaTours.com. He's kind of an Indiana Jones type figure. He goes all over the world. I wasn't familiar with him this morning. I woke up early and began watching his videos, and I didn't get anything done. I was fascinated. He goes over certain parts of the world, geographic, monolithic structures, and does research on them. Fascinating. He was born in Minnesota. He grew up in Western Canada. He even, in 1995, moved to Hawaii and was involved in the canoe building, the sacred lizard that pierces the heavens, the Moak. I can't even pronounce this. Moakea Opalani. This project had lasted 2 years. Learned to make Hawaiian outrigger canoes. I'm just really excited to talk to him. Fascinated. Brian, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know that much about you. I mean, I read a little bit about your bio and your interests and how you got here. So give us the Reader's Digest version. Who is Brian Forster? How did you get to this point?
Well, basically, I've been fascinated by ancient enigmas and mysteries since I was a kid. Probably the first one starting with the Sphinx in Egypt. And I've explored about 100 countries so far. And, so I've spent more or less the past 15 to 20 years exploring ancient megalithic sites and other mysteries in different locations around the world, and have found out that we've basically been lied to by academia in terms of the true history of humankind and who built some of these almost impossible stone structures that we find at different locations on the planet.
When you say lied, people, they almost instinctually want to connect with this past. Are they starving for the truth? Are they starving for to know where they come from? What? Why is it that the Egypt specifically is so fascinating to people?
Well, Egypt, because it's been studied, you know, since the time of the Greeks, basically, and then through Napoleon and into modern times. And it's just the incredible constructions that are there. Of course, the Great Pyramids and different tunnels and shafts and different mysteries that are there. And what I came to find upon my first trip was that there were stone structures that could not possibly have been made by the dynastic Egyptians because they didn't have the level of technology required to do so. And so that's why I've been going back once a year with a big tour group to show people firsthand that in some cases, some of the stone structures we find in Egypt and other locations could not be replicated today with our modern technology.
Let me ask you, you talked about lied. We're being lied to. What are some of the biggest lies that you've seen, the biggest lies about our history? You mentioned, you know, the dynastic period, what have you. What are the big lies that you have found that would make people go, wow?
Well, in the simplest terms, it's the idea that the Egyptians arrived, what we call the Egyptians, arrived in what we call Egypt about 5,100 years ago. And then 4,500 years ago, they built the three Great Pyramid system and five other giant pyramids in Egypt. And after that, their level of building and technology actually went downhill. And that is completely illogical.
It makes sense to me. I've watched, History Channel or whatever. There's a lot of these type of shows. One of the things that always frustrated me, you have the Bible, and obviously there's a major story, Moses, woven in with Egypt, and then you have these quote-unquote expert Egyptologists that will tell you, some of them will tell you flat out, this story is impossible because the timing's all wrong. Their timing, they're saying this, and they speak about it like they were there or something. It seems puzzling to me. Do you have any illumination on any of that timeline, biblical connection?
Sure, a little bit. I don't really specialize too. Actually, I don't really specialize at all in the dynastic period, because the megastructures that we're looking at, including the Great Pyramid, clearly were made by a very advanced civilization long before the existence of the dynastic people. When the dynastic people showed up about 5,000 years ago, the Great Pyramid was there, as well as seven other pyramids and other very anomalous works in stone, especially, that had to be done with very advanced levels of technology, not the Bronze Age tools of the dynastic people.
Okay, so let me ask you specifically. Maybe you don't know. I don't know. I only looked at some of your videos. I mean, I was fascinated by them. Maybe you talk about this or not. The timeline that quote unquote Egyptologists say, they say that it doesn't match with the Bible. Therefore, the Bible stories must be. Do you do any of that research? Have you looked into that at all?
I'm starting to get into that now.
And do you have a certain feeling for it? Because it doesn't make sense to me. Maybe you have a similar feeling. I don't know.
No, I think the Bible is a very good, accurate historical record. There are discoveries being made in Israel and beyond on an almost daily basis that back up what the Bible states. So the difference between Egyptology and the Bible is a written document of history, and a lot of Egyptology is speculation. They actually get a lot of information wrong because they're basing everything on supposition.
What is the biggest supposition that they start with that you would say, maybe you shouldn't start there?
Well, again, they say that the most complex structures built in Egypt were the earliest, and then everything went more or less downhill. What we can clearly see are two different construction techniques. We see works in very hard stone done in the pre-dynastic times, and then during dynastic times, they actually worked with relatively soft stone, such as sandstone and limestone.
I'm going to, this is my perspective. I'm no expert on this. I wouldn't even call myself an amateur Egyptologist. But it seems like this is more of a religion than a science. And when information is presented that doesn't fit into their religious doctrine, it's almost like they work together to put it in a box, like, oh no, that didn't exist. I mean, do you get that feeling as you look at this?
Oh, very much so. Unfortunately, they've had a real stranglehold on the history of Egypt for quite a long period of time. It's quite a close-knit group of people who support each other. The difference between what they do and what I and others do is that we're looking at ancient Egypt, ancient Peru, ancient Bolivia, etc., from a multi-prong approach. We bring in geologists, we bring in engineers and other experts in technical fields to give their opinions as to how and in some cases when these structures were built. And none of the ones that I've been with agree that the dynastic people could have built the megalithic works in Egypt. The same in Peru. The Inca could not have done the megalithic constructions that we find in cities like Cusco.
Now, when I grew up, or when I was a small child, the Sphinx was such a fascinating point of reference. I don't remember, you know, at one point they were debating about what the Sphinx was or was it wasn't. I don't know at what point it became pretty much common knowledge, hey, the Sphinx was carved down from something else. There was something bigger there before, and they carved it down. It seems like in my lifetime, at one point, they said, oh, no, the dynasties built this, and this is what it is. And then somewhere along, they at least admitted that. Am I accurate, or am I just misremembering this whole thing?
Yeah, they're starting to lose grip with that because Dr. Robert Schock, who is a geologist at Boston University, as well as more than 200 other geologists, agree that the weathering on the Sphinx had to have been done by precipitation. And if you do a climate model, it clearly shows that the Sphinx is at least 10 or 12,000 years old, which is twice the amount of time that the more or less that the dynastic people have existed. So the Sphinx was there when they arrived. It was likely in the form of a giant lion. And then during dynastic times, the head was recarved into a human face because the erosion on the face is less than on the body.
That fascinates me, to be honest, because we're, you know, and this goes across we're seeing scientists that are so sure about climate change, or they're so sure about, I don't know what it is, about brushing your teeth up and down, not left, right. I mean, science comes across, and they're so sure about these things. Even the things when I was a little child being taught about Egypt, and now it's pretty obvious that this is not even close. What goes through your mind as you basically are breaking paradigms every day? You are disappointing whole industries by the information you're finding.
Well, actually, what it's truly doing is it's making history much more fascinating, because if you can push the timeline of civilization in Egypt and probably other locations to at least 12,000 years, which is twice as long as we've been taught in terms of civilizations, then it actually makes history far more intriguing and far more mysterious, and that's why it's worthy to pursue unlocking these ancient riddles that standard academia has been closed to and have been trying to cover up.
Okay, correct me where I'm wrong. Again, I'm an amateur at best at any of this information, but just generally from the guests that we've had and my own, studying this, we're saying that, or people believe that written history, Sumerian, whatever, 5 or 6,000 years ago, the Bible corresponds probably about 5 or 6,000 years ago, civilization started in the world, and that's where we kind of start from. That's kind of the, what we suppose or what we assume about history, at least it have for a long time. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that's the standard timeline, but now we're discovering there's more and more evidence that there's a series of cataclysms that happened on the planet between 12,900 and 11,800 years ago. So over 1,000 years, there are a series of cataclysms that very badly damaged our planet and probably wiped out any advanced civilizations that did exist at that time.
There's an interesting verse of scripture in the Bible. And a lot of our audience comes from at least biblical faith. And so I personally like that, but I think our audience like that too. There's a very interesting verse in the Bible that I think has been overlooked for a long time. It says, God gave commandment to man and woman, mankind, to replenish the earth. He didn't say populate the earth or replenish the earth. He said replenish, means like redo it again. And so the allusion here, the reference here becomes, hey, I'm putting you here to repopulate the earth, that this has kind of been destroyed, or you're starting over, or you need to do this. What you are saying, maybe there's some truth to that from your research.
Oh, very much so. And supposedly, too, in Genesis, where it says the earth was null and void, sounds like that there was a series of cataclysmic events that happened, and then civilization had to be rebooted. So the standard timeline of 6,000 years ago being the rise of civilization was actually a renaissance of the rebirth of civilizations.
So your research, here, the Great Pyramid, the very greatest of the monolithic structure in the world, or certainly the most famous, are there in Egypt, the Great Pyramids. You're saying they weren't done by the, when you say dynasty, that means like, Moses, Ramses, that whole dynasty. It was not done by those people. It was done much, much earlier, maybe several thousands of years earlier. And they had much more advanced technology than the people in Moses' time did. That's what you're saying.
Oh, definitely, because we see the actual tool marks. We see machining tool marks all over the Giza Plateau. Others locations, such as there's a place at Saqqara called the Serapeum, and that's two underground tunnels that have 25 boxes made of solid stone, as in a box and a lid. There are 25 of them. They average in weight 100 tons, and
wow.
Also the stone is granite that was brought most likely from Aswan, which is 500 miles away. So you're talking about not only sophisticated technology, but the movement of very large stone objects over great distances.
Give us a reference point. I kind of have Egypt in my mind, the Nile River, Cairo, or is that kind of the center? I don't even know that much about the geography. Give us a reference. Where is Saqqara?
Okay, well, actually, Saqqara is When people think of the Giza Plateau, they tend to think of the three pyramids there, but actually the Giza Plateau covers many, many miles, especially north and south. And so Saqqara is actually part of the Giza area. It's to the north.
Okay, to the north.
Yeah, and actually the best way to look at this is if you the way we start our tours is we fly actually from Cairo to the very south of Egypt, and that's where we find, for example, the quarry where the granite was taken from. And most of that area up to where we call Thebes, which is about the middle of Egypt, and that was the ancient capital, most of the work there is from the dynastic period, again, from soft stone, such as limestone and sandstone, which you can shape with bronze tools. But then once you get farther north and get into the Giza area and even farther north, that's, again, where we find the much harder stone objects that the dynastic people could not have shaped or moved or quarried.
Let me ask you about that. You mentioned climates, the precipitation. Obviously, when we think of the pyramids, all we think of is sand and desert. But you're saying your models, it's pretty much proven that at one point there was a lot of rain there at that point, maybe even a tropical area. Yes?
Yeah, it was supposedly it was more like savanna, like African savanna. So you would have had grasslands and bushes and trees and things like that. At present, it is literally nothing but sand. It does occasionally rain there, but climate models that have been done state that 12,000 years ago and before, the climate was very, very different. There was a lot more precipitation, and again, more than 200 geologists state that the weathering on the body of the Sphinx especially, and the Sphinx enclosure, because we see vertical weathering, not horizontal, which would be the result of sand and wind, but vertical, which has to be precipitation. So that means a lot of rain over a very long period of time to be able to weather the Sphinx so badly.
What do you think these cataclysms, what do you think they were that would totally erase such an advanced civilization?
Well, there are different theories about that, but they're starting to coalesce. And I think honestly what happened is that the center of our galaxy, which is has a black hole, that according to Dr. Paul Laviolette, who's an American physicist, he said that every 13,000 years, there's a cycle where the black hole actually fills up. And then it erupts or it emits energy, which then travels across the galactic plane. So this would be lethal energy that would have entered our solar system, upsetting the planets, and quite probably going straight through our sun, causing the emission of very intense heat that struck certain locations on our planet. And that also that ended the last ice age very rapidly, causing the ocean levels to rise between 350 and 400 feet in a very short time frame, which, of course, could correspond to the Great Flood.
So it wasn't the climate change is not caused by my SUV, then?
No.
It's okay, I just want to be clear. Or cow farts. It's not cow farts either.
No.
Okay, all right. I just want to be clear. You know, this is just this what we've had so far, the little bit of information that you've talked about these ancient civilizations, just the fact that there was very ancient civilizations, predate really our written history. They were totally wiped out by cataclysms. You're talking about these cycles in the universe. I can see why this information has been controlled, and I can see why maybe governments or grants or whatever have been hesitant to put this information out. If you thought, hey, the 13,000 years is coming up and the black hole's about to emit, you may not want that information out there to the public.
Well, it would cause a lot of fear, but again, if it is 13,000 years apart, then it's not going to likely happen within our lifetimes. That's a good thing.
Well, it sounds like it's close, though. I mean, 13, if we're talking, you say, I can't even do the math. So if it did happen 12,000 years ago, we're talking about another 1,000 years, basically, is what you're saying.
Well, probably a window of maybe 200 to 400 years from now. So it is close. They're not positive that it happens every 13,000 years, but that's what Dr. Paul Laviolette believes.
You know what and I like about talk? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
And there is increasing scientific evidence to support the Great Cataclysm theory.
You know what I like talking about you already? I just barely met you. Is you're not one, because I've listened to a lot of them or several of them on, you know, TV or what have you. They are so sure about, I mean, you would have thought they knew Ramsey personally or something, the way they talk. And they're like so sure of it. At least you talk in generalities and this is what we see. And this is, you know, at least you don't talk like you lived there or something.
Well, I come from a scientific background, so everything I do is based on.
Well, so do they, supposedly.
Well, supposedly, but then again, you have major problems going on, like the idea that the Great Pyramid was built by Khufu or Cheops because they found his, writings about him supposedly in the upper chambers inside the Great Pyramid, which appears to be not correct. And then the Khafre Pyramid, which is pyramid number 2, supposedly a small statue of Khafre was found upside down in a ditch when they did excavation. So they automatically, you know, leaped to the conclusion that Khafre must have built the Great Pyramid. I mean, that's very slim, flimsy and slim evidence.
All right. We got about 30 seconds. Well, we're about to go to the break in about 30 seconds. Is there anything I didn't ask you? I should have asked you about this before we kind of move forward.
Oh, not really. We could go on for hours just about Egypt by itself.
What's the most surprising thing that you ever found in Egypt to you personally?
I think, well, many things. We've actually seen evidence of very intense heat scorching the stones at locations like Karnak. So that would support the idea of plasma from the sun striking the planet.
Wow. That is fascinating. Surprising, too. More with Brian Forster, Hidden Inca Tours. On the other side, let's talk about some of your tours, Brian. And
sure.
We'll see what we can get involved in. This is fascinating. And also Peru. Let's talk about those elongated skulls in Peru. You're listening to the Power Hour. So good to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
I think Cass Ingram and Brian Forrester are getting along well.
Yeah, because Cass is always on those mountains looking for herbs. I think maybe he should go down to Peru with Brian and start digging around, see if they got, you know, maca growing up there in Peru or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, at the Power Mall, North American Urban Spice, you know the oregano, just have to have Purely C, the whole list. Give us a call, 877-817-9829, thepowermall.com, the detox clay powder, and so many other things. Thank you for your support. Your purchases, your donations, your prayers are what keeps us here. Independent media, independent thought allows us to have somebody like Brian on and ask these questions. So you know the address, thepowermall.com, thepowerhour.com is our other website, 877-817-9829. Getting back to Brian Forrester. HiddenIncaTours.com is your website. Tell us a little bit about your tours, what you do, how people can get involved.
Okay, well, actually, the best thing about the website is the fact that 98% of it is free content. So you have access to over 1,300 YouTube videos. I have 37 books that I've written, and like tons and tons of photographs and articles and blog posts and things like that. But also, of course, it is for tours that we do of Peru and Bolivia and Egypt and occasionally Baalbek and Lebanon and Easter Island and other mysterious and exotic locations around the planet.
What's your most favorite place to visit?
I would say Egypt and the highlands of Peru.
Why? Why Peru?
Well, actually, I live on the coast of Peru now so that I can study these things anytime I want to, more or less. And it's, again, in the highlands of Peru, especially around the city of Cusco, which was the Inca capital, we find these incredible megalithic constructions that the Inca, who were a Bronze Age culture just like the dynastic Egyptians were, that the Inca couldn't have done that construction. So they found a massive megalithic abandoned city and decided to make that their capital.
What is the deal with, you know, like Peru and Egypt, where there's so many similarities? I mean, maybe these people connected somehow, but they seem to be doing the same type of thing, the same type of structures, what have you. Is this, there's something about culture, or is there more evidence of a connection? I don't know. That thought always comes to me.
Well, I think the thing that connects the two together are the incredible fertility of both places. So around the Nile of Egypt, of course, is where all of the food for Egypt is grown. And in the highlands of Peru, it's all farms. So both places were able to manage quite large populations. And when you have large populations, then, of course, you can have specialities. You can have people who are doctors and physicists and astronomers and philosophers, you know, all sorts of different things. The same in Peru. The Inca were a very advanced social civilization that had multiple disciplines. And the Spanish were quite in shock when they first arrived in the 16th century at what a high level of social sophistication the Inca had.
My father-in-law, he's dead now, but he was an astronomer. But his first love was archaeology. And my wife got this book. I don't know if it matters, but it's called Pictorial Ancient America. And it's from the 1920s, the book. And then in these pictures, I mean, I don't even know if they let you see some of these pictures, but it has these cave dwellings in Peru, or these different structures in Peru, and then up into the United States, these cave-type dwellings. Do you have a sense of why people were building homes or cities or whatever out of rocks and caves? It's almost, you know, why didn't they build them on the land? It's like they were protecting themselves from something or something. Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the result of the series of massive cataclysms that happened, that survive were able to find shelter. And probably the most profound place where you see that, and which I did in September, was in Turkey. I was able to go to one of the underground cities called Derinkuyu that goes more than 20 stories into the bedrock. So
wow.
Profoundly huge. Well, that's a big question. If you just look at pictures or watch videos of it, it looks mysterious. But when you actually climb into it itself, you're allowed to go 10 floors underground. There's no way that could have been constructed with hand tools. So I think it, again, was an inheritance from a much older advanced civilization. There's supposedly something like 200 or 400 underground cities in Turkey, and they're all connected by tunnels. Some of the tunnels are several miles long. So how could that have been done by primitive people with hand tools? It's improbable.
You know, talking to you, the other question or the other thought that comes to mind is about, and I have no idea where you fall on some of these subjects, but the theory of evolution that mankind started from a primordial soup and one-celled organism, and we evolved, and we're basically at the height of our development right now. We're continuing and evolving. I mean, history just doesn't prove that that's true. It's kind of really quite the opposite in a lot of times. The degradation of mankind is what I'm seeing, even talking to you.
Well, that's true. And actually, I come from a biological background. So I studied biology when I was in university. And as far as I can tell, we had Darwinian evolution shoved down our throats. And when I actually asked one of my professors, what if I have problems with some aspects of Darwin? He said, you won't have a career.
Oh, my gosh. Does that bother you?
Well, it does, because recently I've been studying, you know, the whole so-called tree of the different hominids, and almost all of it is speculation that you had, you know, basically apes, and then you had kind of human-like beings, and then you wind up with us. There's very little actual scientific evidence that there were these quite massive evolutionary leaps.
I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong. As far as, I mean, obviously birds on Galapagos Island, maybe they developed, the hardbeak birds lived, and so they developed, and so now they all have hardbeak bills so they could eat the food or whatever. That's kind of natural selection. That's a type of evolution. But as far as, you know, mankind flipping from monkeys, basically, or whatever, as far as I know, there is no, meaning zero, meaning zip, hard evidence that that has ever occurred.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you.
Wow, I didn't think we were going to talk about evolution today. This is pretty fascinating, Brian. Now you got me thinking on that. Kent Hovind, I don't know if you know him, he would go around debating people, scientists or whatever, about Darwin, and he basically got thrown in jail, shut up for what he was doing. I mean, that's just insane to me as how controlled this science. I thought science was about discovery and experimentation and new thoughts and hypotheses, but really what I'm finding out, that's not true at all. You're going to believe what we tell you to believe.
Basically, that's it. Again, it seems to be almost like a boys club kind of thing. You're either in or you're out. And, you know, this whole thing about stuff has to be peer reviewed. We did some DNA testing of the elongated skull people here on the coast of Peru, and it wasn't followed up on by any academic. They've actually tried to dissuade anyone from looking at the results that we found.
Let's go there. Now, if you're, what was the Indiana Jones movie? Was it The Crystal Skull? I don't remember. One of the movies that talks about these elongated skulls or whatever. That's a theme of this movie. We're talking about there's obviously some bones from these people with these skulls. I mean, this is, we haven't made this up. I mean, it's there. Let's get into that. What are we looking at? What do you think those things are?
Well, the funny thing is that I'm more or less the only person on the planet who's studying these people, because I actually live in the town of Paracas, which is where we find these elongated skulls. The standard story is that they simply developed on the coast of Peru. For some reason, they decided to bind their babies' heads to alter the shape. But again, through scientific study, what we found is that the original inhabitants here who had elongated skulls were a subspecies of human, probably Homo sapiens paracas, not Homo sapiens sapiens. And based on the DNA testing that we've done, it appears that they originated around the Black Sea area of Eurasia and migrated 3,000 years ago to the coast of Peru.
Okay, I'm fascinated. I'm hooked. Now I have heard other people say these are aliens. These are, I think El Marzulli, Steve Quayle's done a lot of research on it. I mean, something's going on. There's giant. I mean, have you uncovered giant bone structures, that kind of thing? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the truth is. I'm throwing it all out to you. What's your comment on any of that?
Well, there are a lot of stories about, giants in this area, but I haven't seen any physical evidence. The Paracas people, though, were relatively tall. They seem to have averaged about 6 feet tall, which is six to eight inches taller than the average native Peruvian. So they would have relatively been, I would think, regarded as being giants, but unlike the ones in biblical accounts or the ones in North America.
I cut you off. I apologize. So you're saying these elongated skulls, from your evidence, your research, you think that they, what makes you think that they came from the Black Sea and migrated? Why do you think that?
Okay, well, the standard story is that all native people of the Americas are descended from people who crossed the Bering Land Bridge 12,000 plus years ago. And so they've all been DNA mapped. And when we look at the maternal haplogroup, which is the mother's DNA, all native people are either, of all the Americas basically, are either A, B, C, or D haplogroup. So we studied 20 different elongated skulls here on the coast of Peru, and only two of them were of those four haplogroups. Only two of them were haplogroup B. The other ones were different ones like U2, U2E1, K, H, H2, and other ones. And so it took me about a month to be able to map, because there are so many different haplogroups, you'd think, well, they must have migrated from different parts of the world. But actually where the commonality or the central place where you find all of those haplogroups is around the Crimea and Black Sea area of Eurasia. And that's also the place where the other largest elongated skulls in the world are found, and they're contemporary in terms of timeline. So I think that's a good connection.
Okay, you went a little over my head on the different DNA groups. So you said the U21 or whatever. So basically there are different DNA than should be in America. That's kind of a basic way of saying that?
Yeah, the DNA is showing that they weren't indigenous to the Americas. So obviously they came from somewhere else, and it appears that they came from Eurasia. So their ancestors did not cross the Bering Land Bridge. They took some kind of other transport, as in ships, likely about 3,000 years ago.
So Columbus wasn't the first person who got here.
nor
the Vikings. You know, so yet another lie that I was told in school.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so they're Homo sapiens, but they're some kind of subspecies. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, you're freaking me out here. I what does that even mean? They're alien. They're alien crossbreed. They're just another type. I mean, what are these people things?
Well, another type of human. When Neanderthal was first discovered, I think most academics scoffed at their existence until enough data was presented to be able to show that they were either a subspecies of human or a different species. And then the same thing with Denisovan, which is one of the more recent ones. And also the Hobbit people of Indonesia were scoffed at as being some kind of monkey or something. But that's the problem, is that you have to build up quite a bit of evidence before the academic community will accept. And what we know from history is that Homo sapiens sapiens is very good at invading and taking over other people's territory. So it's quite likely that these people were human, but they weren't Homo sapiens sapiens, but they were close enough to us that normal human beings could breed with them. And I think that's what the evidence is showing quite strongly.
Whoa, the story gets even more fascinating. So, okay, I don't even know what to ask you now. So you're I'm sorry, Todd. I could barely hear you. What did you say, Todd? Todd? Oh, Alan, Texas, online. Oh, okay. We got a caller, Brian. Why don't we go to a caller, let them get involved and ask you a question, if that's okay?
Sure.
Alan in Texas, good to talk to you, buddy. You're live on the air on the Power Hour. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. They're 2250.
Yes, sir.
Man, you're just twisted off on all different directions here. But I was going to ask your guest if you're kind of in the area, if he's ever been to Romania, and there's talk of a Romanian Sphinx in Romania and tunnels underground and interlinking with a lot of these other complexes. Has he studied any of that or been there?
No, I actually haven't been there yet, but a good friend of mine was just there a few months ago exploring the possibility that there's a Sphinx and that there are underground tunnels and all sorts of different things there. Romania is a very mysterious country, and it's actually quite close to the Black Sea, Crimea area. They've also found a lot of elongated skulls in that part of the world as well. So that is someplace I would like to go in the relatively near future.
Yeah, I guess Peter Moon, along with Radu Sinemar, there have been some books written about the in the Besaji Mountains there. So quite interesting stuff. What about, in China, supposedly what the largest pyramid that's been found so far has been in China. I know it's probably not really easy to get into, but, I'm really interested in, the interlinking, the tunnels systems that are supposedly underneath these things. And, that's what I was just wondering, and very interesting. I'll let y'all get on with the show.
Hey, thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Great question. There's speculation about these great pyramids. I've heard that they're a power plant link. I heard that they're medical pyramids where people are healed. I heard their information downloads from the Kasha files or whatever. I mean, I've heard all kinds of things. Do you have a sense of any of that, or do you have opinion of any of those things?
Well, I think that they were energetic structures of some kind. My personal belief is that, you know, people talk about power plants. I don't think they were producing electricity, but I think they were massive resonant structures. And that the obelisks, which, again, were not created by the dynastic people, that the obelisks were actually the receiving stations. So the Great Pyramids would produce energy and then transmit it to the obelisks. And the obelisks were set up in very specific locations, sacred to the dynastic people. And that I think that they were responsible for creating almost like an, or like an energetic field that could alter human consciousness or open the consciousness up to receiving higher levels of states of being and things like that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What would be the purpose of that? What kind of energy are we talking about? Are we talking, you know, orgone energy? Are we talking about scalar energy? Are we talking about, I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, I think just being able to open up the human mind to be able to more or less download information, whether it's from the Akashic Records or from the Creator or from or for healing. I think any subject like this, I don't think that there was one specific purpose. I think there were a different array of purposes depending upon the intent of the individual.
You know, I often think back civilizations on this subject. You talk about predating the Bible and their civilization. I wonder what their civilization was like. Did they have an orange-headed person elected president, and half the world hated him and half the world loved him? You know, what was their downfall? What was the last days of their civilization like?
Well, which ones?
The ones, you know, who built the Great Pyramids. I mean, does this stuff ever go through your mind thinking, you know, they lived there and they had history before them. They had different records that went back and they argued about what came before them or not. I mean, I just wonder what their perspective was.
Well, it could be. In Egypt, it appears that they were like very left-brain, intellectual engineers, like very linear thinking, very logical. Whereas the works in the highlands of Peru is much more of a right brain, artistic, creative approach. So I think there were different civilizations that probably existed at the same time in different parts of the world. There's also another location you may have heard of called Pumapunku, which is located near Lake Titicaca in Bolivia. And it was built, I think, by a third civilization. Again, very logical and pragmatic. So I think there were different ancient civilizations that existed in or on the planet prior to 12,000 years ago.
You mentioned Noah. You mentioned the flood. Does science accept that yet? I mean, I've heard certain scientists. Is that kind of getting to be an accepted thing? Hey, at one point there was a mass deluge of water, or some kind of universal flood across the world, or most of the world. Or is that still just like, no, we can't talk about that?
No, there's more and more mounting evidence that the world's oceans rose by 350 to 400 feet very rapidly.
Wow. Wow.
Again, in the time frame of somewhere like 12,800 to 11,700 years ago. And that timeline even corresponds with Atlantis, because Atlantis supposedly collapsed about 11,800 years ago. So right within that time window, even, you know, concepts like Atlantis can be fitted into the picture. You're talking about a very advanced civilization that most people think is simply folklore, but there's more and more scientific evidence that these cataclysms happened and that very advanced civilizations had to have existed to create the megalithic works that exist to this very day.
All right, we got about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes. Let's talk more about your tours. So the people are thinking about, they sound interested in this. That sounds fascinating. They go on a tour with you. What's it like? What do they get? What do they experience on this?
Well, the whole thing is a very interactive experience, and it's all in the field. So, again, it's the difference between looking at a picture or reading a book or watching somebody else's video. You get to interact with the environment. So in the case of Egypt, one of the special things we do is we rent the Great Pyramid for 2 hours. So only our group is allowed inside the Great Pyramid for that 2-hour window. And then in the highlands of Peru, we cover all of the megalithic sites as well as the Inca sites. And we show quite conclusively that the Inca came into the area about 1,000 years ago and found all these megalithic works there and simply adopted them and used them for their own purpose.
Do you ever see things that, hey, we'll let you see, you go there one time, hey, you can go in here, you can film, you can do whatever, and you go back and they're like, no, you can't go in there anymore. We don't want you to see anything there.
Yeah, more and more as time goes on, parts of the ancient sites in Peru are slowly being closed off, including
Why?
Machu Picchu's like that. Well, they say they're doing it to preserve the site, and to some degree that's true because Machu Picchu gets 6,000 people a day.
Wow.
But the great thing is that in Egypt they're actually opening places that were forbidden. So that's what I always look forward to. We always have a site that has been sealed off for probably hundreds of years, and now they're suddenly opening them up to the public. You have to pay a lot of money, but you get to go through the shaft and tunnel system on the Giza Plateau, for example. And other sites are opening up for us in March of this coming year, or actually of this year.
What does it cost to rent the Great Pyramid for 2 hours?
$2,400 US.
I knew you'd know. Wow. So for $2,400, you can rent the pyramid for 2 hours and then go through. How big are these groups that go through with you?
We usually have a group of about 65, well, maximum of 65 people.
Wow, that is very cool. When is your next tour?
It's in March.
To Egypt or to Peru?
Yeah, in Egypt.
Wow. Stay right there. I want to say something to you after the show. Is there anything like you'd like to say in conclusion? Hidden Inca Tours is his website. It's really been fun having you on. We got about, I don't know, 30 seconds. Last thought is yours, Brian.
No, it's been an honor to be on the Rents Radio Network. I've actually been on Jeff Rents's show a few times. A very fascinating, intelligent man. And I just encourage people to have a look at the website. Again, most of the content is free. But if you want to come on a tour with us, then the forms are there, or the links are there to be able to connect.
Is there a phone number? Is there a phone number people can...
No, okay. Actually, there's an email form on the homepage you simply fill in.
Okay, stay right there. Again, ladies and gentlemen, God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. William Federer will be here among Uncle Kevin, I'm sure. And again, have a great afternoon. God bless you.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.